From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Farm worker advocates are celebrating the recently announced updates to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Agricultural Worker Protection Standard, intended to improve worker protections against the harmful impacts of pesticide exposure. We'll take a closer look at what the updated regulations will mean for Florida's nearly 300,000 farm workers and their employers, and where advocates say further protections are still needed. Plus, state lawmakers will again tackle regulation of oil and gas drilling in 2016. Southwest Florida legislators have filed bills that, among other things, would preempt local ordinances that ban fracking, like the one passed this summer in Bonita Springs. We'll hear from supporters and opponents. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Regulation of oil and gas drilling returns for Florida's 2016 legislative session. Southwest Florida lawmakers are again proposing bills to regulate a form of fracking called high-pressure well stimulation and other forms of oil and gas drilling. Among other things, the proposals would void local ordinances, like the one adopted earlier this year that bans fracking in the city of Bonita Springs. We'll take a closer look later this hour. But first, just over a week ago, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency officials announced updates to its Agricultural Worker Protection Standard. Farm worker advocates had been lobbying for the changes for years. They aim to better protect workers from the harmful effects of pesticide exposure. At a recent news conference in Washington, D.C., EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy said the previous standards were more than 20 years old and were not enough to adequately protect workers. She pointed to an estimated $10 million to $15 million annual health care cost related to farm worker chemical exposure. What will the updated regulations mean for the nation's roughly 2 million agricultural workers, including Florida's nearly 300,000 farm workers? What will the new standards mean for their employers and the healthcare industry? And how do these new rules come about? And what protections for farm workers are still needed? Joining me now for an exploration of these questions is Jeannie Economus. She's the Pesticide Safety and Environmental Health Project Coordinator for the Farm Worker Association of Florida in Apopka and a longtime farm worker advocate here. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Great to speak with you again.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
And we're also speaking with Carla Martinez. She's senior attorney for the Migrant Farm Worker Justice Project. Thanks so much for your time today as well.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And listeners can connect with our guests and join the conversation. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And Jeannie Economus, let's begin with you. First of all, tell us generally about the work and mission of the Farm Worker Association of Florida.
Well, the Farm Worker Association of Florida is a statewide farm worker organization in the state, and we have been around for about 33 years. We have five offices in Florida. And since the beginning of the organization in 1983, one of our main areas of work, one of our main program areas and main issues with the communities that we work with has been farm worker health and safety. Our mission is to improve living and working conditions for farm workers, and that includes occupational exposures in the fields. So our organization has been conducting pesticide health and safety trainings with farm workers ever since the initial worker protection standards were released in 1995. They were actually released in 92, but not implemented until 1995. And in the past few years, we train a minimum of 500 farm workers per year in different areas of the state on how to better protect themselves from pesticide exposure, what the risks are, but we also teach them what their rights are under the regulations to good health and to a safe and secure work environment, which doesn't usually happen, but at least they know their rights and know how to protect themselves. So that's really vitally important to the workers that we work with.
And Jeannie, on the Farm Worker Association of Florida's website, you know, there's a detailed account there from a former farm laborer in the Apopka area, and she talks about how being a farm worker back in the 1960s, she would watch the sky for planes flying over, and when they did and they were spraying chemicals, everybody in the fields would just sort of lay down and drop to the ground and get sprayed right along with the crops. I mean, I know that's a far cry from where we are today, but I was hoping you could maybe take us back to, you know, a little bit of the history when it comes to safety conditions from farm workers and you know, what kind of long-term health impacts those folks may have suffered or may still be living with.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, it's not such a far cry from what's happening today. Mm. Things are a bit better because of the regulations, but those cases still do happen, unfortunately too frequently, where farm workers can be in the field and get sprayed either directly, which is a little bit less common, but also gets sprayed by drift on winds and also by volatilization of pesticide residue on plants. So there's still, unfortunately, a great deal of exposure. But I think what's really telling is that I started working with the Farm Worker Association in 1995, and I was appalled to learn that we have been using pesticides to a large extent on farms in the United States since the 1940s. And it wasn't until 1992 when any real significant set of regulations were passed by EPA or implemented or started by EPA to protect farm workers from pesticide exposure. So from the 40s until 1992, there was really virtually no real system in place to train farm workers about pesticide exposure, to protect them in the fields, for them to know their rights. And it's just shocking what that has done to a whole community of people. I work with a largely Hispanic and African-American and Haitian population, but in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, and on into the 70s, most of the farm workers in Florida were African-American, and they did not receive any training. Farm workers would tell us about bringing home empty pesticide barrels and cutting a hole in them and using them for barbecue pits, barbecue grills, bringing home empty containers and using them to store things in their homes because nobody told them that these chemicals were dangerous. Also, farm workers did not have access to hand washing water and soap in the fields, sometimes no bathrooms. I mean, it's really inconceivable that we knew these pesticides were toxic at the time, and yet so many farm workers, generations of farm workers, went without any knowledge or education or real strong protections against pesticide exposure. And there's health consequences as a result of that.
All right. And I do want to get more into those health consequences a little bit later in the conversation. But going back to something that you had just said with the EPA's worker protection standard adopted in 1992, is this what we're seeing happening now, what they just announced late last month? Is that really the first significant update to that standard since 1992?
It is. The standard that was adopted in 1992 and implemented in 1995 was just very basic. Things like farm workers need to have a training about pesticide health and safety. They need to have decontamination supplies, basically hand washing water and soap. They need to know about re-entry intervals, how long after a pesticide is sprayed before they can go back into that area. Very, very basic and inadequate regulations. And so for about 20 years, the Farm Worker Association, along with many other groups around the country, have been trying to get these regulations updated and improved. And I would say in the last 5 years, we've been working very collaboratively with several other groups around the country, including grassroots groups like the Farm Worker Association and national groups like Earth Justice and Pesticide Action Network, to try and get these improved regulations. And it's been a long haul. It's been a tremendous amount of work. We thank all the supporters that have signed petitions and postcards to EPA. But we at last have improved worker protection standards for farm workers, and we are delighted. Of course, it could be better. There's lots of areas where it could be improved, but we did get some of the things that we asked for, and it's nice to have, even if it's not a complete win, it's nice to have somewhat of a win at long last after all these years.
Well, let's highlight some of those improvements that were made with the new, updated standard. From what I understand, when this was updated, or before this was updated, rather, there was really no age minimum for farm workers working with pesticides in the agricultural industry. Currently, could there be or are there minors applying and mixing pesticides in Florida fields?
Absolutely. We don't see it that much in Florida, but we see it in other states as well. In North Carolina, there is a big problem with that. It does happen in Florida also, but there has been no age minimum age. So people as young as 12 and 13 and 14 and 15 years old could technically handle pesticides. So they're called handlers, and that could be anything from mixing to applying using some of the equipment to apply pesticides. And EPA had originally proposed for these new regulations a minimum age of 16, which we felt wasn't adequate. And thanks to, again, great support from around the country, we were able to advocate for a minimum age of 18, which is a big deal because it was really hard to even get that much of a minimum age.
And I understand the updated standard also increases training requirements for farm workers. What does that mean exactly? Or basically, does that mean that the type of training that you've been providing through the Farm Worker Association of Florida will become sort of mandatory for everybody?
Well, I wish that were the case. Our trainings are very comprehensive. The training that EPA, we have not seen the training that EPA is proposing. We do know some of the elements that they are including that will be new in the trainings that they're requiring. For example, right now the training that is offered to farm workers does not include much information about take-home exposures. So, for example, farm workers that are working in the fields can get pesticides on their skin, on their clothes, and then they go home and pick up their children or come into the home with their clothes and wash their work clothes with their regular laundry. All those things are dangerous and could expose the family to pesticides. So the new training is supposed to include information about that, including information about women's reproductive health related to pesticide exposure. So the trainings are supposed to be improved and also to be more interactive. We hope to see that happens. But also another really key thing is that the employers will be required to do record keeping and to keep those records for 2 years to show that they have completed the training, so they have given the trainings to their workers and they'll have those lists. One of the big problems that we see now is so many farm workers tell us that they will go to work the first day and actually that's another big point. Right now the regulation says that a farm worker must be trained within the first 5 days of starting work. Well, that's, you can be exposed within those first 5 days. So the new regulation has eliminates the grace period, and farm workers must be trained before they actually start work. But what happens now is so often farm workers will say that they go to work on their first day. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. They're half asleep. The employer puts a video or DVD in for them to watch, a 15-minute EPA video, and they sleep through it. And at the end, they're told to sign a piece of paper that they saw the video and they were trained, and then they go out in the fields without any real understanding of what they're up against with pesticides. And hopefully that will, with these new regulations, hopefully that will change.
All right. We'll get into some more of the updated regulations here in a bit, but without enforcement, these new protections won't mean much. Who is responsible for enforcing these new rules?
Well, that's a real good question. And even though right now we are celebrating the victory of these worker protection standards, we're only taking a short breather to celebrate because our next big effort is going to be on making sure EPA has a strong implementation plan and a good enforcement strategy in place. In the United States, the EPA sometimes will, in some states, will be the enforcing agent, but in many states, EPA allocates the enforcement to a state agency. And in Florida, that's the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services.
All right. Carla Martinez, I wanted to bring you into the conversation now. Carla is with the Migrant Farm Worker Justice Project with Florida Legal Services. First of all, tell us a little bit about the Migrant Farm Worker Justice Project.
Okay. The Migrant Farm Worker Justice Project serves agricultural farm workers. We are a statewide project, and we assist primarily in employment-related matters, like non-payment of wages or work contract violations by the farmers and the employees. And we are in an unrestricted program, so, you know, the workers we do represent range anywhere from workers on H-2A agricultural work visas, they're undocumented workers, or local citizens and residents.
All right.
And to a limited extent, we have done some pesticide exposure complaints with the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services.
Yeah, tell me about those complaints. What kind of complaints do you hear from farm workers, you know, when it comes to specifically workplace protections, I suppose, or maybe lack thereof, and how do you handle those?
What we have seen in the past, and I think Jeannie sees it a lot more than what we do, but we usually get complaints about workers being sent to work in areas that have been recently sprayed with pesticides, and, you know, they tend to get sick or they get rashes when they go into those areas. And what we've done in the past is we send a complaint with the Department of Agriculture, and I mean, the response can be quick at times from the department, but the issue that we have seen is that the fines are often minimal when it comes to violations of the protection standards. So there seems to be not an incentive, right, for the employers to stop breaking the law, essentially.
Okay. Andrea Delgado with Earth Justice joins us as well. Thank you so much for joining us, Andrea. Sorry about the confusion earlier. But I was hoping you could tell us a bit about your work on Capitol Hill and really how that's helped bring about this change from the EPA.
Thank you for having me here for the opportunity. A lot of the work that Earth Justice does is working coalition with farm worker organizations like the Farm Worker Association of Florida to make sure that more than anything that we're putting workers first, front and center, because these standards were really about ensuring that farm workers are not being poisoned by pesticides on the fields. And what we did was making sure that working in coalition with the labor unions and with the Farm Worker Association of Florida, that we brought workers and their stories to Congress, to the administration, to the White House, so that they could hear directly from the workers about the reality that's happening in the fields, because what we've been hearing from the opposition is largely that this standard is not necessary. These poisonings are not happening. Growers are simply taking care of their workers, and that's simply not the truth. There are some good actors, but we really needed to show that there's workers and children that are being impacted by exposure and that there's been a historical disparity in the protection of farm workers, and that it was really time for this administration to correct that inequity before the Obama administration left office.
So, Andrea, have you, actually brought folks, to Capitol Hill to speak to elected officials, to speak with officials at the EPA, about their experiences?
On multiple occasions. And what I can tell you is it's the most moving, most compelling experience, detailed legal analysis, or even, hearing from advocates about what's going on the ground is one thing, but hearing from farm workers themselves is the most powerful and moving thing.
Right. And Jeannie, economists here in Florida, I understand that, Senator Geraldine Thompson is pushing for a comprehensive study by the University of Florida to determine if pesticide poisoning caused or contributed to the long-term medical issues suffered by farm workers. And, you know, that includes, I think, a lot of the folks in the Apopka area that you and I have talked about in the past. You know, and we're talking broad-ranging health effects, things like lymphoma, chronic kidney disease, cancers. What can you tell us about that kind of an effort? Do you think that kind of a study is really needed to prove the connection?
Well, the issue of the Lake Apopka farm workers is kind of a specific case in itself, which could be a whole show in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But the Lake Apopka farm workers were exposed to organochlorine pesticides, which the most of which are now banned because they're so toxic. In that category is DDT. And these pesticides are persistent organic pollutants that bioaccumulate in the body. And the community of people that used to work on Lake Apopka farm, vegetable farms, have multiple chronic health effects that we feel are related to long-term chronic pesticide exposure. So that's the study that Senator Thompson is asking for, is to look specifically at this population of farm workers. That being said, we know now that even though the organochlorine pesticides like DDT have been banned, there's all kinds of new categories of pesticides, or relatively new, they're not that new, carbamates, organophosphates, neonicotinoids, fungicides, that also have increasing scientific evidence that they contribute to chronic health problems also. And so while the study that Senator Thompson is concerned about is looking at the organochlorines, the bigger issues are that farm workers all over the state, even now, are exposed to what we thought were less toxic pesticides, but we know now do have long-term health effects, such as the new links between Roundup and certain kinds of blood cancers.
Hmm. We're exploring details of the recently announced updates to the EPA's Agricultural Worker Protection Standard aimed at better protecting workers from harmful chemical exposures. We're speaking with Andrea Delgado with Earth Justice, Carla Martinez with Florida Legal Services Migrant Farm Worker Justice Project, and Jeannie Economus with the Farm Worker Association of Florida. Listeners can join our conversation with your comments and questions. Phone lines are open at 877-GCU-TALK. That's 1-877-428-8255. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or follow the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Jeannie, I wanted to bring this up as well. I think the last time that you and I had gotten to speak at length, which was several years ago, I apologize, we've been talking specifically about soil fumigants. And as per the Montreal Protocol, I know, you know, the highly toxic methyl bromide was supposed to have been phased out by 2005. That didn't happen, but has that happened now?
Well, methyl bromide it hasn't been completely phased out yet in the United States, but because growers know that it is going to eventually be phased out, they're trying alternative kinds of pesticides, fumigants, and actually right now in the Dover Plant City area, just a few weeks ago, they were doing pre-plant fumigation for strawberries. And there were lots of complaints from residents nearby the strawberry fields of both the smell of the pesticide called Paladin and also some symptoms, including respiratory problems of people and of their pets. So we've been getting emails and calls from some of them, and we refer them to the health department. So, yes, fumigation is still a big problem. And I think the key is that we need to move away. Instead of just continuing to do research on a stronger pesticide, a different pesticide, we need to rethink the way we do agriculture in this country. We need to stop continuing to spend money on research on more pesticides and look at alternatives to pesticides, sustainable agriculture that's better for everybody all the way around, from farm workers to consumers that eat the food. We need to change the way we think.
I understand what you're saying. It sounds like quite a tall order, though, isn't it, Jeannie?
Yes, it is, but we have to start somewhere. Just one example, on the Lake Apopka Farms, prior to the state shutting down the farms on Lake Apopka in Central Florida, there were efforts by the agricultural extension agents to begin to implement more sustainable agricultural practices on the vegetable farms on Lake Apopka. Instead of moving forward with those kinds of efforts and advancing that, instead the state of Florida spent $113 million of taxpayer money to buy out the farms and shut them down. Now, the large farm owners on Lake Apopka just ended up going to other parts of the state or to South Georgia and continuing to farm the same way, still using toxic pesticides. We had an opportunity to move away, to transition, and it's not going to happen overnight, but we can begin to transition. We had an opportunity to do that on Lake Apopka, and we did not do that.
And I wanted to focus for a minute on, you know, not just so much the health effects, but the costs as well. I had mentioned in my introduction that EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy pointed to an estimated $10 to $15 million annual health care costs related to farm worker chemical exposure. Do you think that number could, you know, not entirely be accurate? And by that, I mean, I know farm workers don't always seek medical treatment for health effects of chemical exposure.
Well, there's multiple problems. One is that a lot of times farm workers don't recognize some of the symptoms of pesticide exposure can mimic a flu. Sometimes pregnant women can think it's related to their pregnancy. Sometimes they don't associate their symptoms with pesticide exposure. That's one problem. The other problem is even if they do, most times they don't tell their health care provider that they suspect that it could be related to pesticide exposure. They don't tell their clinic where they go, where they work. And the other big problem is that the clinics don't take occupational health histories, and the majority of healthcare providers in the United States are not trained on occupational health. So they're not even on the lookout for these things. And that's especially bad for farm workers because if there is a health-related problem related to work, and it's not reported as such by the health provider, then that worker is not eligible for workers' compensation. So there's multiple layers to this, and we need to confront it at all those different levels.
Additionally, are there issues with workers, you know, even if they know that there's a problem with, you know, the way operations are happening on the farm that they're at, just simply not reporting it for maybe fear of losing their jobs or whatnot?
Oh, that happens literally every day. I can't tell you how many farm workers have come to our offices, and they will come to us with complaints. I'm sure Carla knows also, Migrant Farm Worker Justice Project knows, how many farm workers come and they have complaints, and then when you ask them to actually make a formal complaint, then they back down and they say, I can't afford to lose my job, especially in very small rural communities. Mm-hmm. Where it's a small town where everybody knows everybody else, one person complaining can be identified and can be blackballed from all the other agricultural operations in that area. We've seen it happen before, so that's another major obstacle to getting stronger protections.
All right. Let's take a call from Kathy in LaBelle. Kathy, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Great. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to let your audience know that I am a worker, a farm worker. I'm a certified farm safety protection trainer. I'm an agriculturalist. And by and large, commercial ag producers are looking out for the best interests of their employees and for the environment. And it's a very complex issue, but I just wanted to remind everyone that it's not as negative as I'm hearing on the radio right now.
Well, Kathy, can I ask you, you know, in regard to these new standards, you know, recently announced by the EPA, do you think that, you know, large-scale growing operations like what the one you're associated with is going to embrace these with open arms?
They'll be embraced. A lot of the items are already in practice. You know, for example, record keeping is being done by the majority of operators. and that's a new change. I heard one of the ladies mention on the radio. So these worker protection standards are in effect, and the law clarifies, and it does make them more complex, and it adds more hoops to jump through. So there are pros and cons from the employer standpoint.
All right. Well, Kathy, thanks so much for the call and for your insights. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
And Jeannie, I wanted to ask you as well, because I knew that there had been issues regarding, I guess, where you felt that the new standard didn't go far enough, or issues that you wished it had addressed that it just simply didn't.
Right. And one of those issues is we had hoped that the EPA would include medical monitoring in the new worker protection standards. Two states, California and Washington, do have medical monitoring. Florida does not. And that basically means that people that handle and apply pesticides will get a blood test prior to their beginning work as applicators and handlers and mixers, so that they can get a baseline cholinesterase level in their blood. And then they get repeatedly checked at periodic intervals to see if their cholinesterase level has dropped or remained the same. If the cholinesterase level has dropped, it could indicate exposure to pesticides, which in the case of California and Washington, the worker will then be taken off of that job periodically until they stabilize the cholinesterase level. And hopefully that will also trigger looking at the practices that are being used. If the worker does not have proper protective equipment, or if it's not being applied or used properly, so that the workers, the applicators and the handlers can address that so that they can be health protective. And we did not get that in this worker protection standard revision.
All right. Well, that is unfortunately all the time we have for this portion of the program, so we'll have to leave it there. But thank you to my guests, Jeannie Economos, Andrea Delgado, and Carla Martinez. Great to speak with you all.
Thank you.
Jeannie Economos is a Pesticide Safety and Environmental Health Project Coordinator for the Farm Worker Association of Florida. Andrea Delgado is a Senior Legislative Representative with Earth Justice. And Carla Martinez is a Senior Attorney with the Florida Legal Services Migrant Farm Worker Justice Project. We're taking a short break, but when we return, a closer look at a pair of bills filed by Southwest Florida lawmakers aimed at creating regulations for oil and gas drilling operations. One thing the measures would do if approved by the state legislature would be to void local ordinances, like the one passed this year by the Bonita Springs City Council that bans fracking in the city. We'll take a closer look. My conversation's just ahead. Stay with us. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida.